The Red Eye Radio Podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Thanks so much for being here this morning. Ah, yes. Another interesting day.
Yeah, it is.
What do we got?
Well, so you have basically Senator Grassley putting out the word that that the lawyers for Ms. Ford, who's making the accusations against the Supreme Court nominee, Brett Kavanaugh, has until Friday morning at 10 a.m.
10 o'clock, yes.
To essentially turn in their homework, her prepared statement and biography. And if that doesn't happen, there's not going to be a hearing. They'll move forward with the vote next week, and there won't be a hearing on Monday. So, aside from that, Chevy Chase says Saturday Night Live sucks.
Actually, where I was going was that survey that showed that human beings are basically hardwired for laziness.
I was going to read that story, but I thought,
researchers at the University of British Columbia and University of Geneva sought to better understand the brain chemistry behind what they refer to as the exercise paradox. This happens when people pledge to engage in regular physical fitness, but instead find themselves becoming less active instead. The need for rest is, of course, evolutionary. Our earliest ancestors needed to avoid too much physical activity so that they had enough strength for hunting and gathering.
Yeah, now we just need enough strength for clicking the Amazon button.
Yes, finding and creating shelter and all the other necessities for survival. But since we don't face such demanding challenges today, we must force ourselves to find other ways to make up for the labor that came naturally to ancient humans. Conserving energy has been essential for human survival as it allowed us to be more efficient in searching for food and shelter, competing for sexual partners, and avoiding predators. Yeah, competing for sexual partners. EliteSingles.com.
Yeah.
So they recruited 29 young adults who wanted to improve the level of exercise in their life and take part in a computerized test. The test required them to do them to move a human figure on the screen, either towards the image of physical activities or away from images of sedentary activities that would randomly appear. And then again, vice versa, participants were hooked up to an EKG to monitor their brain. A brain monitor to monitor their activity during the exercise. The results show the participants tended to move towards the active images or away from the sedentary ones at the fastest rates. We found that the participants took 32 milliseconds less to move away from the sedentary image, which is considerable for a task like this, the study said. So what they're saying is that we're hardwired to be more likely to like to do lazy things, to rest.
But is it generational? And I don't mean just the age groups. I mean like today's generation overall, today's society overall. Because look at all the conveniences that we have. We demonstrated one, as opposed to growing our own vegetables and going out and, you know, slaughtering our own cows and chickens or having to hunt or fish. Now you can just click a button and have it delivered or just drive down the block and go, you know, walk around a store and bring it home. Drive through a restaurant.
What they're saying is the reason that they look at this and say we're hardwired for laziness is they went after people that they found and interviewed who really seemed to be people that wanted to exercise. Mm-hmm. They really wanted to be involved and do different things, and they even were more likely to be around images of resting and relaxing. Here's the point. You know, you and we talk about people who work this shift. If you saw me at home sometimes, you'd think I was the biggest slug in the world. Why? I sleep twice a day. Mm-hmm. A lot of people have jobs where they get into those jobs and they focus. This is probably one of those jobs. I know people probably don't think it, but you got to focus. Mm-hmm. You really do. You got to come in and you got to focus on what you do. And we sort of do a high energy show. And so you come in 5 hours, and I'm sure people have other jobs where they do the same thing. You work in an Amazon warehouse, you may be walking in slow. Okay, what am I going to do? Soon as your shift starts, boom, 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 boom. I mean, you are just at it. Mm-hmm. And so probably you will find a lot of people that even if you're extremely active in what you do, that the imagery of a sedentary lifestyle is something you go, oh, wow, that really looks great, or whatever. Even if that's not what you're about or what you do.
I think there's something to that. I think on the other side of it, it is exactly what I was talking about, and that is those that even are high energy, we have been conditioned because we don't have to do those things. We don't have to do the hard things anymore. We don't have to build our own structures. People do it for us. We don't have to go out and grow our own food or go hunt and gather. People do it for us. If you look at a lot of the responsibilities, talking to a real estate agent, a friend of mine, talking about my neighborhood in particular, saying, you know, that the young professionals that come in, especially the young couples, they call them, dinks, dual income, mm-hmm. no kids, right? And they come in and there's a young couple, lovely young couple that did this, a little over a year ago, directly across the street from my house. They're both physical trainers. She's a nurse, and he's also full-time, and he's a firefighter full-time. They have very, very, very full schedules. They wanted everything in their home that they were buying to be completely done, no work to be done. My wife and I are quite the opposite. We're looking for the deal that we can get in and make it our own and make and get, you know, something out of it, but also get a good deal out of it. They're willing to pay. Now, it doesn't mean they're necessarily lazy, but I think the mindset is that either they're looking for, like you said, they're looking at something going, wow, that's really appealing because they're working quite a bit. They're not getting enough rest, whatever it may be. But I also believe that it is part of that conditioning as more and more conveniences. What was the study that showed? I mean, we basically live as kings today by compared to the standards of the past in terms of a society on this planet.
I've made the statement that and I started thinking about it when they did the series of History Channel, the Men Who Made America.
Mm-hmm.
And this was about the early billionaires, Rockefeller and everybody else. And it talked about their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I remember watching it saying, except for the big houses that they have,
mm-hmm.
if you think of everything else, the average American lives like a billionaire did 120 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
We live like a billionaire did. There was no electricity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They had an ice box, ice. You didn't have modern conveniences. You didn't have modern medicine.
Mm-hmm.
The vehicles that they were still, you know, many of them may have had the early, vehicles. But now people can have vehicles, and just the way that we live our lives, the food that we eat, the quality of food that we eat, the clothes that we wear, the conveniences that we have, technology has made it. And think about the whole history of, you know, human, go back 10,000 years. And think about this, that in just 120 years, you might be able to make the case 110 years or 100 years, that the average American today, the average person in Western civilization today, lives the quality of life, even a better quality of life than a billionaire did 120 years ago.
Mm-hmm. And then beyond that, not just the luxuries that we have available to us, for that luxury of convenience. Think about the idea, I mean, for those under the age of 30, we used to have to, regardless of what it was, we used to have to get up and go get it, unless we had a catalog, and then we could get it in 4 to 6 weeks. But, I mean, if you think about what it is, all these conveniences that have been built into our lives now, things that can just be brought to you, you know, they're not necessarily on a silver platter, but that convenience, that time savings. Now, often it has to do, especially I think in this country, has to do with the fact that we are busier, that we do work very hard as a working society, as a working group, as you know, the workforce of America. Collectively, we work extremely hard. You know, it used to be, it was unheard of that anybody would work after dark. And now we, as a society, it runs 24/7.
Well, you know, I posted on Facebook the other day, I think it was Sunday morning, it's like, you know, 5 to 8, I'm walking into Home Depot, and I put it on Facebook, just Home Depot. I said, you know, it's a busy day when you walk into Home Depot at 8 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
And somebody wrote to me, yeah, but how many times will you be back today? And I thought, oh, no, that's a statement from 20 years ago.
Right.
I'll only be there once today because anything else, I'm only going there for the one or two things, not the 10 things that I need, because everything else I've gotten from Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
I'm only walking in because I need this thing right now.
Right now.
So it's it isn't even the same. Think about that, and you and I have talked about just little electronic things that you need around the house, little doodads here and there. That we all, how much time did we used to spend just 20 years ago going from store to store to store to store to store to find that? Think about how many hours of the day that is,
mm-hmm.
and the fact that that was physical activity, or that was you as a human being having to get up and leave the house, organize your day, and organize what stores you have to go to see if they've got the product here, 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 and here. That means you just got up and you were more mobile just in that itself.
Yes.
That's just one tiny little sliver of the pie of a day of the average human being.
Mm-hmm. I find myself even going, okay, can this project wait for 2 days until I get these things? You know, you're talking about the thing, I need it now, and then I'll think to myself, you know, if it's a broken faucet and you got water going everywhere, obviously you need to fix it now. But, I mean, I reprioritize because we create those efficiencies in our lives. Now, creating efficiency isn't necessarily lazy. You're using your time better because you're doing more things. You're actually more productive for more people. So I think there is, I think it's a great theory that, you know, talking about, you know, looking at it going, you know, with all the time we spend doing things, not necessarily our jobs, but all the things that we have responsibilities to do, and looking at that, any picture in the study, and saying, wow, that looks nice. I'll tell you this. Last week was the most restful vacation I have ever had. And I was for one of my vacations in 1993, I was in a hospital bed. So this was more restful. It was more relaxing. It was one of those things. And we sought it out and we arranged it so that it was going to be that way. And I think that's attractive to a lot of people going, man, if I could just turn it off for a while. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's also that even the devices, even the conveniences that we have, we have more of them, which gives us what? More tasks on our list. And so when we create more efficiencies, we create more time in our day, and we tend to fill that time, many of us, not everyone. The stoners don't. Oh, I'm sorry, we can't say stoners
can't call
anymore.
Them stoners anymore.
No.
But when I see this and it says when people were less likely and how they viewed whether people were lazy or not, or whether they really didn't want to participate in the physical activity was by the way they look at images, I guarantee you, you show me 5 pictures of a beach and 5 pictures of somebody doing exercises, I'm going to stay with the beach.
Mm-hmm.
Even if I may not go to a beach for the next 10 years, I'm still going to look at those pictures before I look at the pictures of exercising, yet I'm going to be exercising every single day.
Now, if you show me a picture of hiking, which we did last week, to me that was very relaxing. I don't look at that as exercise. It's getting out, you know,
because
I like to get outside, but I don't see it as exercising. Show me a picture of exercising. I don't know anyone that really loves to exercise. They love the benefits of exercise, maybe, but not the actual activity.
Unless you're running on the beach.
I've done that before.
866-90-RED-EYE.
It's crucial that you keep your truck and yourself cool. One of the most important parts of your AC system is the receiver or the dryer. This component serves as a receptacle for the refrigerant. It also absorbs moisture from the refrigerant and filters out debris and harmful contaminants that might harm your compressor or other parts of the AC system. The best way to ensure your receiver dryer functions properly is to replace it before it fails. Since its main role is to absorb moisture and filter out contaminants, it can often get clogged up. Anytime your AC system is open for service or repair, be certain to have the technician replace your receiver dryer. Replacing the dryer before it fails can save you time and money later. Visit a truck service location near you to make sure your AC system is in tip-top shape.
This maintenance tip is a service of TA Truck Service Road Squad. If you break down, we show up. Call 800-924-SHOP.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll-free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
He's Eric Carley. I'm Gary McNamara. I'm in trouble when I have to basically ask Eric what day it is. So
this week has been a blur. It's gone by so fast.
I said, this is Thursday, right? He said, yes.
Yeah.
It can't be. It's gone too fast.
Yeah.
Talking about the accusation against Brett Kavanaugh, the nominee for the Supreme Court, and whether there'll be a hearing or not, and just everything related to it. We go to Bill in Fresno, California. Bill, you're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
Hi, guys. Enjoy your show. My father was a detective in the Kern County Sheriff's Department for a number of years. And one of the concerns that I have, and I've talked to him about this, was it seemed to me it would have been simpler for Kavanaugh and maybe the guy that was supposedly in the same room to take a lie detector test as well. I know it's not admissible in court, but it's used by law enforcement to separate truth from fact in case it's used by the FBI and the CIA for security purposes internally. And it would have ended all of the questions other people would have had.
No, it wouldn't have.
Well, because what the left would have said, let's say they both passed with flying colors. They would say, well, there's a reason it's not admissible in court. And that's
It takes away from the credibility, but that would take away from the credibility of Woods, the fact that she took one. You follow me? It would have been a level playing field. That's my point.
Well, what they would again, whether let's say she failed it, or let's say they passed it and she didn't ever take it, it didn't matter. Or if she did take it and she failed it and they passed it.
My point is,
couple that with them taking it and passing it with flying colors, the only thing the left is going to say is there's a reason it's not admissible in court. It doesn't stop the agenda from the left.
Yeah, because you don't accept her lie detector test that she claims that she took.
Right.
Because you sit there and you would have to use the same person administering the lie detector test with the same question. So you'd have to start all over again, and nobody is going to agree to do that. This isn't a court of, you have to understand, Bill, this is not a court case.
It's not a criminal case setting.
It's not even a civil case.
Right.
It is a political process.
Right. And so, you know, had they taken it, all three of them, and it was administered the test by the same person or agency, and she failed it, and they passed with flying colors, the left would say, no, because there's a reason it's not reliable.
Senator Hirano from Hawaii, mm-hmm, stating that all men need to shut up.
Right.
Bill, this is not a critical thinking debate that we're having with the left.
No.
Oh, okay, if we only do this. No. All men need to shut up.
There's a process in place, and Dianne Feinstein failed to abide by that process and the procedure.
They never follow the company code of conduct. Eric Harley and Gary McNamara on Red Eye Radio.
Never is a big word.
And he's Eric Harley. I'm Gary McNamara. About Friday at 10 a.m. should be, I'm saying should be because you never know, should be the deadline as to Christine Ford's lawyers presenting her prepared statement and also biography to the Senate Judiciary Committee.
Yeah.
If they are not presented by 10 a.m., then the Monday hearing is off, which means there will never be a hearing.
Right. Yep.
Yeah, there will never be a hearing.
Yep, not going to happen. And I suspect that they'll just use this knowing that she's not going to testify. They'll use this saying, we didn't get enough time, this is outrageous, blah, 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 blah. And then by the I don't know, a day or two after the vote, it's all over.
Well, I think you said it earlier in the show when you said just a week ago it was all about the documents and documents and documents, and it came out how many documents, you know, and compared it to other Supreme Court nominees, and that kind of look, hundreds of thousands of documents here. But he worked for Bush here, yeah. But those are executive privilege are called on many of those, and many of those were released anyway, and there was nothing there. And as the Republicans would say, you're voting no anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You've already said you're voting no. You're all voting no. You're attempting to delay the process by, and that's the thing. Everybody knows it. Even the one caller that we had today that said the FBI should investigate it because it's only going to take a week, and we started getting into the discussion about the fact that in any investigation, you have to do what? You have to interview the witness themselves. The witness is the one. The Senate Judiciary Committee is the one who does, you know, who vets the Supreme Court justice for the advice and consent portion of the Constitution that the Senate has for Supreme Court nominees. So if the FBI, even if they did interviews, they would simply be the intermediary between you and the victim.
Mm-hmm.
The Senate Judiciary Committee wishes to talk to the victim directly.
Yep.
And when you have a case, the first person that anybody who is investigating a case, the first person, if you've watched Law and Order, you remember, well, the victim of the crime is in the hospital. We need to talk to them as soon as possible.
Mm-hmm.
You always need to talk to the victim of the crime first.
Mm-hmm.
The Senate Judiciary Committee has said, look, willing to talk to you. You know, we're willing to talk to you in public or private. And so far, the answer has been no, I'm not ready. Well, fine. When you're ready, then you can come back to us. We're going on with our business.
She was prepared to talk to the Washington Post. She was prepared because I said it yesterday, but it bears repeating here. If you're telling the truth, you're always prepared to talk. I understand the clerical part, the procedural part of preparing a statement and submitting it. There's no reason that can't be done. She was aware of that and made aware of that the moment they scheduled the hearing. Not Wednesday. When Senator Grassley reminded them, it was done the moment the hearing was scheduled.
Let's go to David in Denver. David, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
Hey, great show, you guys. Always like to listen to you. I work night shift.
Thank you.
Hey, real quick possibility I wanted to throw out. What if, however long ago, that was Feinstein the first person that she confided in this story?
No. I can't think of the representative.
So my question,
she went to a congresswoman first, and then the congresswoman said, go to Feinstein. Yes.
So my question is, what if she had this conversation with this first person, you know, in complete confidence? Hey, you know, here's a side note, and guess what happened to me years ago? Can you believe it? And then, but please don't tell anybody. I don't want this to get out. And now it's snowballed so bad, and she's backed into a corner with huge amount of pressure from the rest of the left.
Well, that didn't happen.
To go forward with this.
Well, that didn't happen.
Okay.
That didn't happen.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think of why.
Yeah, but you're bringing up.
She would hesitate.
But you're bringing up a scenario that didn't happen.
Uh-huh.
She met with the congresswoman. The congresswoman told her to go to Feinstein. She wrote the letter to Feinstein. Once she wrote the letter, then that's when everything. That started the clock. Yeah, that started the clock ticking.
And by the way, she's been given the opportunity, and she has a choice. It is still available to her. She can testify behind closed doors. This does not have to be on television.
Right.
She can testify to the committee.
It seems like the left is so excited to use this to their advantage. I thought maybe she wasn't as excited as they are.
At least one news organization was so excited about Lanny Davis and what he was saying about Cohen because they thought it was going to bring Trump down, and they believe that this would stop this situation with Ford, will stop Trump and his appointment of Kavanaugh. But it's not going to. It may change. I don't know. I can't tell you how the votes are going to go. But so far, there's no indication that the numbers have changed by much and that it has changed to the point that they in the Senate, they believe they don't have enough votes, because we likely would have heard about that if the soft head count had changed by now. It might between now and the vote. But here's the difference is that the one possibility we have to consider is that she knows she's going to be under oath. And she knows that this is going to be, because if she doesn't show up and testify behind closed doors, even then I'm telling you, I'm sorry, but I have to call bogus on this, because it tells me that they're not willing to do it under oath. What have I done? Well, and that could be the case.
I think she's in a little bit of a panic.
Yeah, and it could be the case. Thank you, David.
Like I said, I don't know. We won't know by tomorrow at this time, but we'll know by tomorrow at 10 a.m. To speculate, again, she is the one that approached the congresswoman. She is the one, Ms. Ford, she is the one that contacted Dianne Feinstein. It'd be wonderful to interview her to find out. I think it'd be a great interview to say, well, what did you expect? Because we still think about this. If you're just examining this story, the number one question is, well, excuse me. You went to the congresswoman, who then suggested you go to Feinstein. So you wrote a letter to Feinstein, but said you want confidentiality. What did you expect was going to happen?
Right.
Because what you're attempting to do, because once you go to Feinstein, once you go to the Democrats, then the whole point is that you want confidentiality for what? You know that you can't win a criminal case on this, so you want to do what? It then becomes not even a civil case. Nope. It becomes a political case of wanting to take down Brett Kavanaugh.
Yep.
That's what it comes to. So if that's what your goal is, well, you're not going to be able to keep your name confidential. So what do you want me to do with it? That's what I would have asked. What do you want me to do with this?
The first goal of coming forward, especially going to a lawmaker, is to make it known.
Right.
That's the whole point.
And so when we, and the last caller talking about, and we've been talking about, the thrill that Democrats are getting out of this, and, where is their mindset? Their mindset is much like the caller we had a few hours ago who called up and said, well, I mean, it'd be reasonable for the FBI to take some time to do this, and you could still get the vote in. We started having a discussion with him, and he sort of got out of control and just went, what do you say about Trump? Trump's a crook.
Yeah. We got a crook for a president.
Yeah, we got a crook for a president. Well, that's got nothing to do with this particular issue here. Yeah. But you see that's what it he was attempting to at first have a discussion with us. And then when we started questioning him and making statements, talking about what the FBI would do, or the fact that forget about the middleman with the FBI, because it's not an investigation. There is no investigation being done here. There would be no investigation. It would simply be interviewing whom first. You would go directly, the FBI would go directly to her. Mm-hmm. Because it's her that she's got all the accusations. She is the alleged victim. Any investigation wants all the information they can get from the victim first. Well, the Senate Judiciary Committee said, well, they're simply going to ask you the questions and then you come to us. Well, since we want to continue this process, come right to us.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, it was a Democrat just a couple of days ago. Let her speak. Let her speak. Let her speak. She wants to speak. We need to get her to speak. And then when nobody else came forward, it's like, well, no. She should get as much time as possible and delay the process. Mm-hmm. Well, no investigation works that way. No investigation of any victim claiming any crime. Do police say, oh, OK, we're going to stop this over here because this person may be doing this over here and you're alleging they're the victim, but you don't want to talk to us. Well, therefore, we're going to stop that other person's life and things surrounding it because you don't wish to talk at this time. No.
And Dianne Feinstein knew that on July 30th.
Law enforcement is going to say, no, we can't move forward unless you talk to us first. We can't move forward or say anything about this person because you've just made the accusation and you won't let us interview you. And the Senate Judiciary Committee is the one that they are the vetting process here for this particular position of Supreme Court Justice. And so cutting out the FBI is fast-tracking it to get as much information out as possible from the victim ASAP.
Mm-hmm.
Having the FBI actually slows down the process of getting justice. It's not about getting justice. Mm-hmm. Never has been about getting justice.
No, and Dianne Feinstein knows the process. She didn't respect the process. She didn't respect the claimant. Because the first thing you would do is reach out to them and say, okay, here's how we could go about this. Because it could have been part of the vetting process early on and still keep her name hidden during that process. Maybe not after, because if they looked into it during the vetting process and found it to be a credible claim, at that point, you would have to return to her and say, you've got to decide at this point. You reached out for a reason because you wanted this to be known. But it will be impossible to keep your name anonymous. All of the decisions here were, and the process was under the control of Dianne Feinstein. End of story. Nobody else until last week. And then Ford would have a say-so had she, Dianne Feinstein, respected that process. There was plenty of time for this to happen. Saying the Republicans aren't giving it enough time, Dianne Feinstein didn't give it enough time. This falls squarely on her shoulders. Full stop.
You could have started the investigation or the vetting of the claim on July 30th.
Yep.
Or you could have told her, look, you want to remain anonymous? We really can't move much forward past the FBI interviewing you, which they have to interview you first.
Yep.
And then again, the others, Kavanaugh would be interviewed on it. Mm-hmm. He would have to agree, but none of the other witnesses have to do it. They don't have to talk to the FBI
right.
in a case like this because it's not a legal case.
They didn't come forward, and
right.
they're not being appointed.
Right. There is no
nominated.
There is no legal case here. So this lays squarely at the feet of Dianne Feinstein.
Yes.
And for anybody who says, well, there's not enough time. You had enough time.
Yep.
She didn't give Democrats, you should be angry at her. She didn't give you enough time.
Right.
And you could have gone through the process at that point. And again, she could have been honest with her and said, look, if you go any further, because we do care about you and your feelings and you wish to remain anonymous, if you wish to remain anonymous, there's no way we really can move forward with this. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
Yeah.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carly. I'm Gary McNamara. So if she doesn't testify somehow on Monday, this whole thing's over. A vote will go through. And if he has the votes, she will never speak to Congress on this. Because there is no need to speak to Congress anymore.
Nope.
So there may be some television interviews in the future, but in all likelihood, the case is this is the last we'll hear about it. I mean, there's a possibility if she doesn't show up Monday. I don't know if they've scheduled for a vote for like next Wednesday or Thursday, but I'm telling you, if they did and had the vote by Wednesday, next Friday, the left is on to some completely other different topic.
Sure. Yep, it'll be over.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Good morning. Thank you for being here. In the news today, the allegation against Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh. Where are we? Well, yesterday, Chuck Grassley said and reminded the attorneys for Christine Ford, that I remind you that consistent with committee rules, Dr. Ford's prepared testimony and biography are due to the committee by 10 a.m. on Friday, September 21st, if she intends to testify on Monday. So I guess that's it right there. There's the timeline.
Mm-hmm.
Tomorrow at 10 a.m., if it hasn't been submitted, there will be no testimony then. There will be no hearing at that point. And then a date, I'm assuming, will be set for the vote. And then the Senate Judiciary Committee will never hear from her because there's no reason to hear from her if he is voted in, voted up, or voted down, either way.
Yeah, there is really, if you look at the situation, it is not going to change. There's nothing that is going to change, I think, the timeline. The schedule. Monday, it's very clear. Grassley has said, he said it a little over, I guess, about 36 hours ago now, that nothing was going to change then. And then he said during the day on Wednesday, we're not going to delay the process. We give her, again, still keep it open, Monday for that hearing, and if she's not there, Kavanaugh's not going to testify because there's nothing to testify against. He can't address anything that is basically presented by lawmakers. He can't address anything without an accuser being there, mm-hmm. So there's no reason to have him there, so the whole hearing would be canceled. So she and her lawyers have until Friday at 10 a.m., and if they don't meet that deadline, I suspect and they're probably already screaming it, it's not enough time, this is unfair, it's very reasonable. She was plenty prepared to talk to the Washington Post. She reached out for a reason. She sent this letter for a reason. This was calculated, and the whole point was to make it known, her claim. She wanted it to be known. She's prepared. And while the Monday or the Friday deadline is a clerical and procedural issue, it can still be accommodated without any problem.
A second potential witness who Ford says was at the party, Patrick, I don't know whether it's Smith or Smythe, has likewise denied any knowledge of the party or the alleged incident. This happened yesterday. Smith, who graduated with Kavanaugh from Georgetown Prep back in 1983, gave his response in a letter sent by his attorney to the Senate Judiciary Committee obtained by CNN, Quote, I understand that I have been identified by Dr. Christine Blaisley Ford as the person she remembers as PJ, who supposedly was present at the party she described in statements to the Washington Post. Smith said in the statement, I am issuing the statement today to make it clear to all involved that I have no knowledge of that party in question, nor do I have any knowledge of the allegations of improper conduct she has leveled against Brett Kavanaugh. So that came out yesterday. You did have one woman who put out a Facebook post that said she, you know, is a friend of Ford and knew her and that she had mentioned it. And then later on in the day deleted that Facebook post and has not been heard from since. Chuck Grassley also, and this surprised me yesterday, I just some things you just assumed that you assumed that by now that Grassley had seen the actual letter that Ford sent to Feinstein. He hadn't seen it. He hadn't seen, he had seen a redacted version of it, but he hadn't seen the letter yet. And he told Feinstein, I need to see that letter. And meanwhile, on the Democrat side, their argument is white men hate women.
Yeah.
I wish I was exaggerating it, but I'm
not. That's pretty much it. That's it.
White men hate women. White men senators hate women. White men Republican senators hate women. And white Republican men hate women. Yeah. And that's why we are where we are today.
Yeah.
This is how bad it is. And so I knew when I woke up last night to come in and do the show, when I saw the different headlines, I said, okay, don't see her testifying. Don't see any reaction for her to want to testify. So unless something changes today where her lawyers say she's willing to testify either in a closed session or in the open session, this thing's over. It's done. Unless somebody else comes forward, but I'm assuming that would have happened by this time with an accusation.
I would think so.
And that's what a lot of people are hoping, and I do agree with that. I do agree with that hypothesis that the Democrats want to stretch this out because they are just hoping. They've seen what happened before. They've seen Ed Weinstein. They've seen in Alabama,
Roy Moore.
Mm-hmm. They saw what happened, how more women started coming out, and I think that's what they're hoping for because that's really their only chance.
Right.
Because if another woman came out or two women came out, then you could stretch this out.
Yes. Yep. Yeah, it's but if unless that happens, and it's unlikely that it's going to, because again, just imagine that if the Ford claim is true, then imagine that there were someone else, right? And a similar incident took place there. They would feel compelled to come forward because they would see by now, if they've been paying attention to the news, and they likely have, if they existed, they would want their story known, seeing that she's not going to be heard. They're going to look at it as, well, wait a minute, I'm a victim too, and if I know she's a victim or believe she's a victim, this is going to be a tragedy because the stories need to be told. We would have seen this. You would have seen another victim come forward by now. I suspect we won't see that by tomorrow morning.
Yeah, neither do I. So there's where we are here at the moment. Meanwhile, in the world of redactions and unredactions, this is from Bloomberg. The FBI and Department of Justice plan redactions despite Trump's document order. President Donald Trump has demanded the immediate declassification of sensitive materials about the Russia investigation, but the agencies responsible are expected to propose redactions that would keep some information secret, according to three people familiar with the matter. This is from Bloomberg. The Justice Department, FBI, and the Office of Director of National Intelligence are going through a methodical review and can't offer a timeline for finishing, said the people who weren't authorized to speak publicly about the sensitive matter. By the way, we read the story, I believe it was from Fox yesterday, that sources said, well, especially when it came to the Carter Page warrant, that might take a while to do it. Well, I saw Devin Nunes yesterday come out and say, no, that should be the easy one.
Right.
That should be that should be able to be released tomorrow.
Yeah.
That there should be no problem with it. So, and the one story in Fox where they're saying their sources told them that would be the one that could take a significant period of time to release, Nunes came out and said, no, that should be released. That could be released tomorrow.
Yep.
There's nothing in it that would affect national security in any way. The White House issued a statement on Monday listing material that Trump wants declassified immediately because of the demands of Republican lawmakers. Among the demands was full public release of all text messages concerning the Russia probe by Justice Department officials Bruce Orr and by several former officials, including two who were fired, James Comey and his deputy Andrew McCabe. One person described the order to release text messages as unprecedented, and another said additional talks will probably be held with the White House over the matter. Might be unprecedented, but so is the allegation that a president colluded with a foreign government to hack the election that has gone on for 2 years, a special prosecutor being appointed when there is no specific crime. It's all unprecedented.
Yep.
So when it starts out being unprecedented, the conclusion may be unprecedented. When the beginning is unprecedented, the conclusion may be unprecedented. Mm-hmm. Or incidents along the way may be unprecedented. The fact that it's unprecedented means nothing to me because everything about this has been unprecedented since the first allegation that Trump colluded with the Russians to hack the election machines. That allegation in itself was unprecedented.
And we have said an unprecedented amount of unprecedented in this last 2 minutes.
So we'll see where that goes here in the upcoming days. Now, we've been told that we could see it. I read yesterday that some of the sources say that, you know, redacting a lot of it shouldn't be hard and they could be released by Friday.
Right. Brennan. Saying that they should resist.
Former CIA director.
Mm-hmm. It's such a horrible attempt. But also we go back to the, you know, one of the things where you scratched your head first and then it started coming out. I forget who wrote the theory that what if it was Brennan that was basically conducting all of this that was happening, if indeed we find out that it was a massive abuse of power. They knowingly used false information to petition for a warrant and spy on the opposition's campaign.
And then the unmasking is the one thing that has always tied us to somebody high up in the intelligence agencies.
Right. Especially when, according to Trey Gowdy, that Samantha Power, whose credentials were used to do this, claims behind closed doors and testimony that it did not go down that way, and it was not her. She didn't do it, which would mean somebody using her credentials.
I have a question. Where's Trey Gowdy these days?
You know what? I haven't seen anything from Trey Gowdy. Haven't heard anything from Trey Gowdy. But when I saw Brennan yesterday on CNN, I'm sorry, I think it was MSNBC, they all kind of blur together these days, saying that. Basically, that all of those have sworn an oath, taken an oath in service to the country, not in service to Trump. Really? Did Peter Strzok do the same?
Oh, there he is. Just from late last week. Trey Gowdy says everything from Gowdy. House Intel panel should release all transcripts from Russia probe.
Yes, I agree.
Trey Gowdy, a member of the House Intelligence Committee, said this week that the GOP-controlled panel should release every interview transcript from its concluded Russia investigation.
Yep.
There is something that has not been released that I think would be beneficial for the public to see, and that would be all of the transactions from all of the House Intelligence Committee interviews, Gowdy told The Hill on, that was last Wednesday, mm-hmm. So he has been around.
Yeah. So. Yeah, and I would, you could do that. Basically, it would be like a raw report.
Right. There are no national security implications there. There are no sources. There are no methods. It's just the interviews that were done.
Let's see it. No reason not to. Wow. There you go. How many pages of documents would that be?
A lot.
Too many for Clinton to delete. That's how many.
866-90-RED-EYE.
President Donald Trump paid a visit to North Carolina to check on Hurricane Florence recovery efforts.
We will be there 100%, and all of the folks from the federal government that are around the table, they're confirming it. That's why we started early, and we'll be here late.
He said nearly 20,000 military and federal personnel are helping local officials. North Carolina Governor Roy Cooper described the storm as a gut punch to the state.
We've lost 27 lives officially so far, and some more are under investigation, and we mourn their loss. We have farmers who have lost significantly their crops.
Congressman David Rauser noted that most of his district is still underwater.
Agriculture in my district, huge component of this state, $87 billion industry. I see Steve Troxler here in the audience, our Commissioner of Agriculture.
Rebuilding efforts include restoring homes and infrastructure. This is Stephanie Ho for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
The USDA report is sponsored by Cenex Roadmaster XL Premium Highway Diesel Fuel and Shell Rotella.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. I just want to play this clip here from MSNBC.
Okay.
I got time, right? Yeah,
yeah,
I got time.
I think
okay.
So.
Mm-hmm. Because this is Chris Matthews with Megyn Kelly.
Oh, all right.
And I'm thinking to myself, are they looking to rebrand her? But here it is, and he's not going insane. He's treating her as a, you know, as a legit guest to talk about the whole Kavanaugh situation and Ms. Ford and her options. Here we go.
Megan, you've been through this a number of times, obviously, as a reporter. You're an attorney. What do you think of where this is at right now tonight with all these demands from the witness, the accuser, and the insistence of the committee that they're going to go ahead on Monday, take her or not?
I think Dr. Ford is running out of options. I think she needs to show up on Monday and offer her testimony if she wants to be heard, because for better or for worse, she is not in charge of this. The Senate is in charge of this. That committee's in charge of this. And their obligation is to provide advice and consent to the president on his judicial nominee. And so they get to decide what will inform that decision. And what they've decided is they'll reopen the hearings, which they think is an accommodation given that Dianne Feinstein knew about this allegation when the hearings were open originally and didn't raise it. She could have raised it, you know, saying there's an anonymous accuser. But notwithstanding that, they're reopening it and giving her the chance to speak publicly, privately. Senator Grassley even said, we'll send somebody out to California to interview you. And she's rejected all of those. And Senator Cornyn is right that she isn't in a position to demand protocols. It's not her right.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
So when I saw that, I went, Megyn Kelly on MSNBC, serious commentary, not the fluff that they originally thought. But the fact is, she's absolutely right. They've offered her all these. You don't get in, even in a criminal investigation, you don't get to sit there and say, well, no, I'm just not going to speak now. But stop the process of other people doing things because I don't wish to speak as the victim at this point. I'll choose the time and place that I speak.
You open the door to all of the protesters who want to stop Trump on every level. Listen, if they're doing it in the FBI, Strzok, and former CIA directors can do it, Brennan, and former FBI directors can do it, James Comey. By the way, James Comey says Mueller's in his fourth quarter.
I saw that.
What are you smoking again? What does that even?
And why is that Drudge Report's lead headline?
Well, why does it matter what Comey thinks? It's just who cares? For Omnitrax, here's your forecast.
Record river flooding will continue across the Carolinas for days, even weeks, as Florence's rainfall makes its way through area river systems. The greatest area for rainfall today, the upper Midwest and northern plains. From just east of Helena, Montana on I-94 through north and south Dakota up through Detroit, so mainly north of I-90, we'll see heavy bands of rain as a warm front pushes through. The Ohio and Tennessee Valley today will be dry. The eastern seaboard drying out after Hurricane Florence. And the West Coast will be dry. Finally, from Tucson, Arizona to Tallahassee on I-10, we're looking at a chance of rainfall today. And the greatest amount of rain will be around the Carlsbad area in New Mexico. In fact, we have flood warnings out for the desert southwest in Arizona, New Mexico, and parts of western Texas. Your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90 Red Eye.
Deservedly been called every name in the book. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley, Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric, I'm Gary, 866-90 Red Eye. Let's head back to some more of your calls and comments. A lot of people over the last couple of days wanting to comment on Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh and the allegation made by Christine Ford, Dr. Ford, against him back 35, 36 years ago. And I guess I see 35, I see 36. The fact is, she doesn't know.
Right.
That's what she says. She doesn't know. So let's head right back to you, Ken, in California. Ken, you're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, guys. How you doing?
Good. Good.
I was going to ask, let's assume for a moment that Ford's claims were true. How does it work if they were both, you know, 15 and 17 years old? They're both minors. What does the law have to say about that? And question number two, I have somebody I talked to online, and they said, well, if he did this and he's 17, then this should follow him around for the rest of his life.
No, because the statute of limitations has passed, first of all. And so it is not under the federal jurisdiction, no federal crime, no allegation of a federal crime was broken here, or committed here. And beyond that, in terms of them both being minors at that time, it is possible for a minor to assault another minor and there is a crime that you can commit. That is on the books. There is a law against minors assaulting other minors. But the fact of the matter is, it's all for naught because the discussion isn't to be had. There really is no criminal investigation here because the statute of limitations, if it did occur, would be well past.
Yeah, the other thing that I feel kind of bad about is just making the allegation is enough to have already put a cloud over this guy's head for the rest of his life.
Not really. That's likely not going to happen. People, first of all, are willfully ignorant in today's society. Most people, it might be a footnote at the very most with people down the road. But it comes down to believability, first of all. And we go back to, the Clarence Thomas confirmation proceedings and Anita Hill and all of that. And while that, again, still is a footnote, it really isn't going to be played out over and over again without something new being added to it that would be something substantial. And that would be some kind of tangible evidence. That's not likely going to happen. Once, if he is confirmed next week, once he's seated, most people can't tell you. What was the study you brought about earlier, Gary? Most people can't tell you one of the Supreme Court justices.
The last poll, the majority of people cannot name one Supreme Court justice.
And so most if he were president, it would depend on if he's a Democrat or Republican and were president or a senator or governor or something like that. Then, that people will still bring it up because they have to run for future office. He's not going to be that once he's confirmed, that part is over. It is a retirement job. In other words, he'll work this until he retires, likely.
And you know, again, inside the Beltway, people remember Clarence Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
Ask a millennial, probably the vast majority, if the majority can't name one Supreme Court justice, mm-hmm. it's probably the vast majority of millennials that can't name, or have no idea, of Clarence Thomas and Anita Hill,
right.
and what happened back then. But
right.
back then, you had the back and forth. You had her stating the specific things, that were done. That was on television. It looks like this is going nowhere. It simply will be an allegation that she wasn't even willing to come out publicly and talk about if this remains on the same path. So if you're talking about reputation, look, that's when you decide to become a public figure, that's mm-hmm. always out there.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody can always make an accusation against you, especially in politics. It's made every day.
Yeah.
Accusations that are false are made every day about politicians. And I know judges aren't supposed to be politicians, but that's how they're viewed as by half the country. And I mean, Democrats view the Supreme Court as a part of the legislative branch. They want those people. They want people to be political that are in those positions as long as they're politically left.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so we've talked about that many, many times. But it's not going to affect any of his decision making if he becomes a Supreme Court justice at all. Of course, I mean, that's a given. Anybody who makes an allegation against you, there will always, look, there's always, when you're a Supreme Court justice and you go through the nomination process, you always know, if you're a politician, you always know half the country's going to hate you.
Mm-hmm.
That's a given. They know that going in. We as talk show hosts know that there's going to be a significant number of people that like us and a certain number of people that passionately do not like us.
Oh, that's, you know, my in-laws, do you?
That's just that's just the reality. So if your point is it's unfair, yeah, it's unfair when people make allegations. And it's unfair and it's not right when people don't pay attention. Yeah, it's not right when you have a significant portion of people that criticize this country and have no idea what the infrastructure or how the country's even set up. Yeah, it's unfair when people don't understand the exceptionalism of the United States because they have no idea what the makeup of our society is. We talked about this with the whole NFL, that we talked about, the NFL being a sense of community and all that. And mm-hmm. what does a sense of community mean? Well, it means that we share values. What are the values that we share? Well, the Constitution of the United States. Well, when you get to the point the majority of people don't even understand what the Constitution of the United States is or what is in it and what has made us different for over 240 years and what made it groundbreaking what the United States did, well, of course they're going to hate the United States because they're completely ignorant as to what's going on. It's wrong.
Yeah.
It shouldn't happen. It's not fair, but it's the reality of the world that we live in.
Yep.
And one thing, if you're a conservative or an originalist constructionist of the Constitution, as I'm sure you look at a Kavanaugh, and I'm sure he believes, even though you may get some nitpicking from some libertarians out there, but if you are a conservative, well, most likely you're a realist, and you understand half the people are going to hate me.
Yep.
That's a given. As soon as you say, I accept running for Supreme Court of the United States as under a Republican administration and you're appointed, expect to get demonized.
Mm-hmm. It's part of the process. And if you are a good person and you are you believe that it is your calling to be a true public servant, then you are willing to go through that. You're willing to endure that.
That's like after the 2016 campaign, and we knew some talk show hosts that, by reputation, that decided to get out of the business. It just mm-hmm. got too tough. People mm-hmm. just hate. There was just too much hatred out there, mm-hmm. Too much anger out there. Well, duh. What do you think you're doing for a living?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, well, what do you think when you get the hate mail? I don't care. I expected it. What do you think we do for a living? Of course we know that when you have an opinion, it's, by the way, it's always been this way. The rhetoric may be more heated on social media. It really isn't, at least to me, the way I view it, on the radio or emails. I've always gotten hate mail.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like,
most of it from our staff.
Yeah, and it's like, okay, and you just move on. You don't get upset about it because there's an expectation that I'm going into a business where we get into the arena of ideas. There are people that are going to tell me to blank off all the time. Mm-hmm. You don't get upset about it. You don't view it as being unfair. Look, there were people that said online that Eric and I didn't like each other.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that one?
Right.
That hurt both of us.
It's true, but we're just mad that they said it online.
Remember? Oh, they get along in the air, but no. They hate
each other. They scream at each other in the hallways. Yeah,
that was a good one. Yes. It was like, wow.
Yeah.
And we got the biggest kick out of it, and somebody might have read it, and somebody be walking around with the opinion that, well, they may sound like they like each other on the air, but they really hate each other off the air, which is not true.
No, it's not.
You know, we're just apathetic towards each other.
Yeah, what?
It's like,
what?
Oh, what am I?
Hold on, I have to Google the definition of apathetic.
Just like Eric comes up to Gary, you know what I did today? I don't care.
I don't care.
You know what my family and I did? Nah, you'll tell me on the air. I really don't care what you do. You think I care about you?
Yeah.
You're just...
I got my dog groomed.
Eric is simply a tool for me to make more money in this business.
Yeah.
He helps me get there, so I tolerate him.
Right, yeah. And by the way, getting my dog groomed is not a euphemism. I'm just saying. That was my week.
And finally, it looks like the wall's not going to be a part of the spending package coming up.
You mean the Pink Floyd album is not? It's only like $14. Why won't they buy the Pink Floyd album?
Well, because
we spend money on $1,200 hammers.
Because
these
of the,
crooks.
Because of the pig float and all that.
Oh, yeah. Well, it is Roger Waters.
What a nutcase. But the Senate overwhelmingly passed a spending package that delays a showdown. No additional money for the wall in there. And they believe that the House will do the same thing. Nobody wants this fight, not even the White House.
Well, and I think something has changed, especially since the president talked about it last. Well, you know, we won't do this again in September. We're going to stand our ground in September. What you see right now is that, okay, we've got to hold on to everything we can. The internal fighting has to stop until after the election. We can go back to fighting each other after the election. But you can't put it on pause. But we can, but right now we have to work together in order to try and keep the House, and also, in order to work toward keeping the Senate. I mean, if the numbers at 538.com are right, then, you know, then you're going to lose the House and you're going to keep the Senate. But you're looking to do both, and you're looking to change things in a direction fairly drastically, which I think has something to do with the declassifying of this information. And I think, by the way, it's justified if it works politically for the president and the Republicans. But we learn through facts. We learn the truth, and we learn something negative about the Democrats, and it changes things in those House elections. Sorry, that's on the Democrats. That's on their side.
I think I'll make a prediction.
Yeah.
I'm not making a prediction for the November election.
Okay.
Because I still believe that the passion of the Republicans, because not just necessarily because of the support of Trump, that's a part, one of the factors. But the other factor that I think is discounted is the insanity of the left and how it has affected those on the right. But if the Democrats take the House, Nancy Pelosi will not be Speaker next January.
No, I think you're with that. I'm with you on that. We saw the other day where, you know, that the party needs, she said something to the extent the party needs new blood. And I'm wondering if she's slowly starting this slow roll of conceding ahead of time, going, okay, we need new leadership, and I'm willing to step down.
Speaker Ocasio-Cortez. Okay, that wouldn't be next.
Except
yet.
She
that
has to be able
January.
To speak. Oh, my gosh, please make that happen. Please make that happen.
You need somebody that could articulate as good as Nancy Pelosi.
Okay. Ocasio-Cortez. Perfect.
866-90-RED-EYE.
This engine report is brought to you by Detroit. The DD15 is designed to provide its peak power and torque between 1,000 and 1,500 RPMs. This fuel economy sweet spot means there isn't much more power available at 1,800 RPM than at 1,400. The only thing being accomplished is burning more fuel without any real benefit. While cruising, try to keep the engine between 1,050 and 1,450 RPMs for maximum efficiency. Also, upshift around 1,650 RPMs or sooner to stay in the sweet spot. Speed is the enemy of fuel economy. On average, every 1 mile per hour increase in road speed above 55 costs 0.1 mpg, which adds up by the mile. Cruising in the high 50 to low 60 mph range can help you get the most out of every gallon of fuel. Ultimately, traffic on surface roads and stoplights will impact travel time far more than a few mph on the highway.
For Shell Rotella, that's the engine report.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carley. I'm Gary McNamara. So very quickly here, what do you think about the whole Chevy Chase thing?
Well, you know, it's funny because I just watched Norm Macdonald's new show on Netflix, and he had Chevy Chase on, and I was telling you, during that show, Chevy Chase was like the old Chevy Chase, being very funny, and he can be very funny just making noises or doing, you know, googly eyes or whatever. But talking about SNL, but what
just
he said, listen to what he, if you read between the lines, Lorne Michaels, basically he was saying, hitting people over the head every weekend with everything that they're bombarded with during the week, which is Trump, right. The craziness of Trump. You know, he's a liberal, Chevy Chase. He said, that's insane. I never thought Lorne Michaels would stoop that low.
Yeah.
Which means, go on to the silly comedy. Don't bring Trump into it.
Into everything.
And they've done that continuously since Trump has been president.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.